Welcome to the Do Your Good podcast series. In this podcast series, you'll hear from me, Sybil, and other experts in the field to help you make your money matter and make a huge difference in the world. I come to you with over two decades of experience as a person who's helped donors give away over $45 million in donations, both large and small. This podcast series is meant to give you the tools you need to be effective in the world and fund nonprofits and issues that you care about with meaning and purpose, and to make a true, deep difference in the world. Okay, everyone, so now what you're waiting for, the actual report. That's what this episode's all about. After my exploration, interviewing so many people, and researching so much material, if you're anything like me, you probably were thinking, there's so many different ideas out there. How in the world do I make a good recommendation on how to increase the use of extreme risk protection orders or red flag laws? Firearm issues and gun control issues in the United States are so controversial. But I hope you heard from some of these interviews that I had, I hope you heard some middle ground and some really interesting themes. What I first had to do, I actually wrote a couple of drafts before the final that I offered to Roundhouse Foundation, and you can get a copy of the report on my website through my blog. You can download it there, or you can go onto the Roundhouse Foundation website as well and get a copy of it. But I have to tell you, I wrote, like I said before, I wrote lots of drafts because in the beginning I was thinking, okay, my first task was just to talk about how to increase the uptake of extreme risk protection orders in the United States. Oh, I found out that that is not an easy task, that there's a lot of opinions about ERPOs and red flag laws. And so in my report, even though my first sentence is all about how do we increase the uptake of extreme risk protection orders, you'll see in here that I offer quite a few recommendations to think about extreme risk protection orders in the context of a lot of other support systems for people who are at risk of suicide and are struggling with suicide. And it's at this point in the episode, I just want to remind you that we're going to be talking about a very tough subject, which is suicide and suicide prevention. If you or a loved one are struggling with suicidal thoughts, please seek expert advice immediately. You can reach out to Crisis Lines. 988 is the national line. I care about you very much. And so now I'm going to continue on with the conversation about extreme risk protection orders. Thanks a lot. I want to just remind you all, I talked about this in earlier episodes, but I want to remind you all about why my client, the Roundhouse Foundation, cares so much about this issue. In Oregon, suicide by firearm, especially in rural and remote communities, is extremely high, and we have to do something about it. Let me just give you some of the stats that I gave you earlier in earlier episodes, but I do want to remind you of them. The Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health reviewed firearm deaths in Oregon and discovered that three counties with the highest gun death rates from 2011 to 2020 were Harney County, Klamath County, and Josephine County. These are very rural and remote counties. All three counties had firearm death rates two times the state average, and the same review showed that males were over seven times as likely to die by firearm than females, and 55% were suicides by firearm. And in addition, white males over the age of 34 accounted for 23% of the population in Oregon in 2020, but 61% of all suicide decedents. The Oregon Secretary of State also did an unofficial audit of extreme risk protection orders, and in that review raised awareness about this important issue when it found that firearm suicide rates in Oregon are 42% higher than the national rate. So this is why my client, the Roundhouse Foundation, said to me, Sybil, can you research this more? We've got to figure out how to do a good funding strategy to support people and policies that can reduce this rate of suicide in Oregon. And so I offer some key steps that I think we need to take in Oregon in order to support an increased uptake of extreme risk protection orders, and also just to support people in rural and remote communities who are suffering from suicidal ideation. So that's our number one goal here. All right, so let's talk about some of the steps. And I'll give you a highlight of all the steps, and then we'll talk about them in detail. The first step is to promote messaging about extremist protection orders that'll show respect, understanding, and care for someone who's having a suicidal crisis. The second step is to include extremist protection order information in available suicide prevention training materials. The third is to improve coordination in rural and remote communities of Oregon to implement extreme risk protection orders. The fourth is to include crisis lines and secure storage in addition to extreme risk protection orders as a solution. The fifth is to identify and offer long-term mental health support to reduce recurring suicidal episodes. And the sixth is to clearly explain liability as it relates to firearm storage and return and storage and return to the owner. That's really important. Okay, let's get into each one of these key steps. So messaging, let's talk about this. And we did talk about, I pulled this one out in my actual episode, my other episode specifically on messaging. And I encourage you to listen to that as well if you haven't already, because I interview key people who are experts at messaging there. But the messaging on the Oregon Department of Justice website about extreme risk protection orders, it really right now doesn't resonate with firearm owners who live in rural and remote communities in Oregon. And it's because the website states things like, ERPOs get guns out of the hands of the wrong people. And really talks, it's really focusing on the red flag laws linked to people who could be performing mass shootings, rather than focusing on people who might be suffering from suicidal ideation. And the characteristics that it goes on to list on the website are really include someone who has a history of actual or threatened violence against another, prior convictions, and many more horrendous crimes against another. While suicide threats or attempts are enough under the law, it's sort of listed there along with all these other horrible things that someone could do. And so there are people in Oregon that are working hard on positive messaging strategies. The Oregon Firearm Safety Coalition, it has language that shows some more respect for firearm owners and explains that people who love guns also care for a person who's at risk of suicide. And the core messaging is that temporarily entrusting a gun to a friend or family member might just save a life, and that it's honorable and trustworthy thing to do to remove a gun from someone at risk of suicide. And in addition to using positive messaging about extreme risk protection orders to be responsive to firearm owners, the Department of Justice could also consider including like a whole dashboard on its website that identifies ERPOs as only one of many solutions to support a person who's experiencing a suicidal crisis. And the dashboard could have information about ERPOs in English and also in multiple languages, and about crisis lines, secure storage opportunities, and mental health services. And by presenting ERPOs alongside all the other options, the law might then be perceived more by a firearm owner as a helpful tool to help someone in need, rather than how it is now, where it's sort of standalone and standing out there as a one thing that is like, use a red flag law if somebody could be a danger to you. That seems like a harsher, much harsher piece of kind of language there. And I have more information about other states that are doing work like this, where they have more of a dashboard approach, in my report as well. Okay, now let's talk about number two. Include extreme risk protection order information in available suicide prevention training materials. So suicide prevention training programs are run through a variety of sources and programs. And let me tell you more about what a training program is. So if you really care for someone and are very concerned about the person and you want to support them while they are in a suicidal crisis, there's trainings out there that can help you be there in the right way for someone. So suicide prevention training programs, they are geared towards specific community members' understanding, and They can, there's tons of them. Some of the ones that people reference that I interviewed are QPR Institute, SIGNS, Ask, Validate, and Expedite, which is called SAVE, Living Works Assist, which is the one that is very common, and Zero Suicide Calm, and there's many more. And these well-respected trainings focus on keeping someone safe and valued. They emphasize the importance of accepting someone's feelings without judgment. They offer information about the best training to use based on one's unique life experience. So these trainings, they do not right now include extremist protection orders as a tool. And when I asked around about this, people generally said it's because they don't want to, the loved one doesn't in any way, or the support person doesn't in any way want to feel, make the person who's having a suicidal crisis in any way have them feel that they're being judged. And so how do you incorporate ERPOs into these trainings so that a person can see that they're a tool and they can be used if the trust is first established and they're not seen as something that's judgmental? So it could also decouple the ERPO from its original identity as a law to prevent community violence or violence against another, and instead as a supportive tool for someone experiencing a suicidal crisis. So a lot of thought could be put into how to incorporate extremist protection orders into these really good trainings that help people support loved ones who are in a suicidal crisis. Okay. Now, the third step, improve coordination in rural and remote communities of Oregon to implement extreme risk protection orders. So this is something that really struck me. Almost no learning or coordination exists to allow law enforcement or loved ones to compare notes on best practices across Oregon. ERPOs are administered on an ad hoc basis and implemented by separate local law enforcement jurisdictions in Oregon. That's 36 different circuit courts. The Department of Justice and Oregon State Police, they have general responsibilities to track ERPOs, but the day-to-day work is left to each separate jurisdiction. And, you know, so as a solution, the state could hire an employee position within state government responsible for coordination between jurisdictions in rural and remote communities in Oregon focused on extremist protection orders. And they could help navigate and answer questions about the process and really support law enforcement folks across the state who might have questions and loved ones. Right now, when I did my interviews and research, I found a wide variety of approaches and really amazing innovative work that was happening on the ground. But people were volunteering to train other folks. You heard from Jake Chandler in my previous episodes. He's one person who was with the Bend Police Department for quite a while and created his own training to support other folks. But so far, it's really on an ad hoc basis. This coordination effort, something a lot of folks brought up. Okay, so the fourth step is to include crisis lines and secure storage in addition to ERPOs as a solution. So extremist protection orders alone, as you know now, they're just not enough to prevent suicide because they can take up to 24 hours, and a person at risk of suicide often acts quickly in less than 10 minutes on their thoughts when they're ready to take the next step. And crisis lines are therefore an important part of the solution because they're open phone lines anyone can call to get immediate support and a sympathetic ear. And the health practitioner or volunteer on the other end of the line is trained to help someone who's experienced a mental health crisis, often with the culturally sensitive and specific sensitivities required to talk with the person who's experiencing the crisis. Also, a securely stored firearm is critical and very important because it gives an adult that extra time to look for help before reaching for their gun and removes access to this means of suicide from youth, assuming the youth doesn't have the lock combination or the code. And we do have a law in Oregon that requires gun owners to secure their guns. And data show that secure storage programs are highly effective at preventing youth suicides in particular, but also in reducing adult suicides. The AMA, American Medical Association, found a 78% lower risk of firearm-related injuries when a firearm and ammunition were stored in a lockbox safe or with a cable lock in the home. And we have lots of examples, but in Oregon, Clackamas County Public Health found a 24% decline in suicide rate it can attribute to the implementation of its secure storage program between 2021 and 2022. So definitely thinking holistically about supporting people in a suicidal crisis is critical, and not just looking at extremist protection orders as the sole solution. And the fifth step is to identify and offer long-term mental health support to reduce recurring suicidal episodes. And healthcare institutions, primary care physicians, and mental health experts need to be an active part of the solution for long-term support for a person at risk of suicide, because crisis lines, secure storage, and ERPOs are focused only on preventing the immediate action. The risk of a repeat attempt is highest within the first year, but it persists for many years and requires constant diligence. But some healthcare institutions are beginning to ask their patients about firearm ownership on an ad hoc basis. For example, the Dornbecker Children's Hospital includes a question in their intake form about firearm ownership, and healthcare institutions across Oregon also include pamphlets and materials in waiting rooms about secure storage and related matters. The Oregon Health Authority also just released in March 2024 a training module for healthcare practitioners and intimate partners to address firearm safety and help someone at risk of suicide. But here's the deal. There's no statewide solution at this time to support physicians and healthcare providers in discussing the role of firearms in preventing suicide with their patients. And it's got to change to more effectively introduce the role of firearms in helping loved ones and law enforcement to save lives. The sixth step is to clearly explain liability as it relates to firearm storage and return to the owner. Because right now it's unclear to many if a loved one or intimate partner is liable if something goes wrong when they remove, store, or return a firearm. This means individuals hesitate to invoke an extreme risk protection order or to securely hold a firearm for another. There's several rules that protect law enforcement from liability in Oregon for holding or returning a firearm on behalf of another, but it's really unclear to many whether a third party is similarly protected. And there's also some information at the national level available about liability, but unfortunately, it's really in a lot of legalese, a lot of folks have told me, which is really inaccessible to the layperson. So those are the six steps that I address in my report. Please check out my full report through my blog at www.doyourgood.com. And it's at this stage, too, when I usually work with a client where I've done in-depth research, and then they ask me, well, who should we fund related to this? And what I find is that this is the really exciting part, because we've done the research. Now we have our steps that we know and we believe we need to take to really support effective implementation to address a critical societal issue. In this case, it's to prevent suicide by firearm in rural and remote communities of Oregon. And the next thing we would do, and I haven't done this yet with this particular client, but I do it with many others, is we then say, okay, what nonprofits are working on these key steps that we've discovered people are telling us are critical that we need to overcome? And in this case, I would probably go back to the people I interviewed and I'd talk to them. What are the gaps? What are the needs? And then I'd create what I call a docket to explain the gaps and needs specifically that the nonprofits have to be able to actualize the recommendations that we discovered in our research. So if you're a donor that's listening to this, you either have your own private family foundation or you want to just personally contribute to nonprofits, I want to challenge you to think carefully about the cause you care about and then to first do research similar to what I did for the Roundhouse Foundation on a key topic, on the key topic you care about. And then after you've done that research, then you'll find that it makes it much easier to be effective as a donor, to give to those nonprofits that are working on solutions that you discovered through your review and through your conversations and through careful listening to all of these amazing people out there that are working on the cause you care about. So I want to inspire you to make a difference in the world, and even the most outwardly intractable issue like gun control and firearms and suicide prevention, things that seem so hard, you can see we even discovered good positive steps we can take to support people in this very hard issue. It means you can do it. You can do it with any issue you care about, and just by talking to people and finding that common ground. All right, well, I hope you all have a wonderful day, and I hope you're thinking now and inspired to do even more good in the world. Thanks for listening. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I enjoyed making it for you. So if you want to find out more about what I have to offer, please check out www.doyourgood.com.
and learn more ways to make your money matter. Until next time, do your good and be well.